It's Friday, July 16th. COVID shots don't leave a mark, but COVID rabbit holes do. We start here.
When it comes to misinformation, not sharing is caring.
The U.S. Surgeon General says the greatest health risk to you right now could be that link someone just forwarded to you.
These advisories are reserved for urgent public health threats, and that's what this is.
We'll walk you through what officials are calling an epidemic of misinformation. He's in charge of picking people to investigate the darkest day of the Trump presidency, so he met with President Trump.
McCarthy's intention was to tell him that he couldn't talk to him about that.
The former president loved his generals. Well, one of them allegedly compared him to Hitler, the new revelations about January 6th. And your Olympic dreams could be derailed because you sat next to the wrong person on the plane.
If it gets out of hand, you've got entire events that might have to be canceled.
An increasing number of athletes are being sidelined even if they themselves don't have COVID. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. A couple weeks ago, the U.S. was averaging about 13,000 new COVID cases every day, which compared to earlier this year is just fantastic. In January, we were averaging 250,000. 13,000, we can handle.
All of a sudden, in the past couple of weeks, we've seen a sevenfold increase in the number of patients that are coming to the ER with COVID.
But in just the last 2 weeks, that number has more than doubled.
New cases heading in the wrong direction at an alarming rate. Cases now on the rise in at least 45 states.
In Los Angeles, cases are up 500% over the past month.
Now, health officials report unvaccinated people account for all COVID-19 hospitalizations at county-run hospitals.
And there is such a thing as vaccinated people getting COVID. Doesn't happen often, but it can happen. But by and large, the vaccinated people aren't getting sick from it. They don't go to the hospital from COVID. So as the Delta variant spreads more and more, it means that more unvaccinated people will be exposed to this virus, and a lot of them will get sick.
Breaking news regarding COVID, LA County.
So yesterday, to limit the spread, Los Angeles County announced that starting Saturday night, they will be reimposing an indoor mask mandate, whether you're vaccinated or not.
Health officials had only been recommending masks previously, but now it will be a requirement, and the order affects everyone, regardless of whether you've been vaccinated or not. It'll take effect this weekend.
And amid all this, the Surgeon General of the United States outlined a new warning to the American public. But it wasn't necessarily about the dangers of the Delta variant. It wasn't even really about vaccines. It was about what American scientists are convinced is the single greatest threat to the country right now. Forces convincing Americans to distrust the shot in the first place. ABC's Sasha Pesnik has been tracking all this. And Sasha, I always expect the Surgeon General to say, you know, smoking's bad or sugar is bad for you, I guess. It sounds like he's saying here, the internet is what's killing people.
Yeah, and it really shows you how important an issue this is for the Surgeon General's office. He's elevating it for his first official advisory under the Biden administration.
Surgeon General advisories are reserved for urgent public health threats. And while those threats have often been related to what we eat, drink, and smoke, today we live in a world where misinformation poses an imminent and insidious threat to our nation's health.
He said these advisories are reserved for urgent public health threats, and that's what this is.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, health misinformation has led people to resist wearing masks in high-risk settings. It's led them to turn down proven treatments and to choose not to get vaccinated.
Basically saying that misinformation is its own epidemic, one that's prolonging the pandemic.
This has led to avoidable illnesses and death. Simply put, health information has cost us lives.
Murthy saying that misinformation has sown mistrust and caused people to reject the public health measures that would help stop COVID spread faster. And Dr. Murthy is here calling for more accountability from everyone, really, but he specifically called out social media and technology companies to step it up.
They've designed product features such as like buttons that reward us for sharing emotionally charged content, not accurate content.
That misinformation and disinformation can spread rapidly and it can pick up steam pretty quick.
And when we talk about misinformation, when we talk about whether it's conspiracy theories or hesitancy, is misinformation the word, Sasha, or is it disinformation, people trying to mess with others' understanding of the science?
Well, it's both, right?
I'm sure you've seen the pictures all over the internet of people who've had these shots and now they're magnetized. They can put a key on their forehead. It sticks. They can put spoons and forks all over them and they can stick.
There's misinformation, which Murthy is defining as false and inaccurate or misleading information about health according to the best evidence at the time.
Certain posts falsely claimed Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine will change people's DNA.
It doesn't have to be fringe conspiracy theories or even malicious. Maybe your aunt, like, reads an article she thought was interesting about how the vaccines don't really work, and she sends it to you. Maybe she shares it on Facebook. Someone else retweets it.
To be clear, do you want a vaccine so that you can implant microchips into people?
No, there's no connection between any of these vaccines and any tracking type thing at all. I don't know where that came from.
Brad, to be clear, the vaccines work. They have shown to be very safe and effective against COVID and variants of concern. But if there's no one there to set your aunt straight, then it can feed this larger spiral.
Today, federal agents removing boxes and sifting through the Napa townhouse of Julie Mazzi, a licensed homeopathic doctor arrested for operating a fraudulent vaccination card scheme.
The White House is also concerned about disinformation, those bad actors that are deliberately spreading what they know are lies.
According to the affidavit, the 41-year-old holistic doctor sold her patients immunization pellets that she said contained a very minute amount of COVID-19 that would give them immunity from the virus for life.
And we know that's been happening.
She also told customers that FDA-approved vaccines contained toxic ingredients and that doses of hers would be safe for children and even babies.
Even in the thick of the pandemic last fall, ABC obtained U.S. intel that was warning about foreign adversaries ramping up efforts to spread conspiracy theories and disinformation about coronavirus in the United States.
A woman is in jail this midday after speeding through a COVID-19 vaccine tent outside the Foothills Mall in Maryville this week.
Brown told the officer that she drove through the tent in protest of the COVID-19 vaccine.
And so if information is power, imagine what weaponizing it can do.
Okay, so then how do you combat it? Like, what are the actual steps that the government can say misinformation's bad? What do you do about it?
Murthy is calling on everyone.
When it comes to misinformation, not sharing is caring, unlike what many of our moms taught us earlier in life.
That means check yourself before you share something and learn how to identify what might be misleading information. And he's calling on more investments in ways to tackle misinformation, more research into how it spreads.
There's about 12 people who are producing 65% of anti-vaccine misinformation on social media platforms. All of them remain active on Facebook, despite some even being banned on other platforms.
And technology platforms to look for misinformation super spreaders and maybe repeat offenders.
Facebook should provide publicly and transparently data on the reach of COVID vaccine misinformation, not just engagement, but the reach of the misinformation.
For our public elected officials, finding common ground on difficult questions, working within their communities, rather than turning any one issue into a political wedge. Basically, calling for those with louder megaphones to take a special responsibility to speak the truth.
Yeah, and it was striking to hear him, because in this era where Republicans and Democrats each have their beefs with the tech industry, here was like the most nonpartisan person of all, the Surgeon General of the United States, really calling out tech companies for their role in a public health emergency. His first big warning, saying, you guys need to get your stuff together because people are continuing to die when they don't have to. Sasha Pesnik, really useful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, Democrats will be investigating January 6th, and so will Republicans, if their leadership will let them. We're back in a bit. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified
quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
We won this election, and we won it by a landslide. This was not a close election.
Now, if we're talking about how misinformation can lead to real damage, certainly January 6th belongs in that conversation.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Yeah! Yeah!
Let's take the Capitol!
Take the Capitol!
You might remember, as attackers forced their way into the Capitol and Vice President Mike Pence was hustled away, President Trump received a call from the House Minority Leader, Republican Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy apparently begged Trump to call off his supporters, which did not happen, not even in a tweet, until violence was well underway.
Why wasn't the National Guard here? There's a lot of questions why that determination was made. National Guard were doing street patrol, but not with on the Capitol.
Since then, McCarthy has become one of the chief architects of Republicans' response to January 6th. He's in charge of which GOP lawmakers would serve on an investigative committee.
Are you going to appoint members to this committee to try to answer those questions?
When I have news on that, I'll give it to you.
And yesterday, amid new revelations about what exactly happened that day, Kevin McCarthy went to Bedminster, New Jersey to meet again with President Trump. Let's go to ABC's chief Washington correspondent, Jonathan Carl. John, McCarthy seemed horrified by the events of January 6th at first, then kind of, I don't know, less so as the days went on. What do we know about what was said at this meeting?
Well, first of all, the optics of this meeting are unbelievably bad. McCarthy is facing this decision of which Republicans to appoint to a committee that is effectively going to be investigating Donald Trump. And then he goes, just as he's about to make those appointments, and he meets with Donald Trump at Bedminster. Now, that said, McCarthy's office has said is that they did not discuss the January 6th committee. They did not discuss who would be appointed to that. And I can tell you that what I was hearing before the lunch was McCarthy was telling his staff and some of his colleagues that if Donald Trump brought the committee up, if he tried to go there, that McCarthy's intention was to tell him that he couldn't talk to him about that, that was not a subject that he could talk to him about. Mm. Now, you know, whether or not anybody's going to believe that the meeting happened and that subject was not discussed, that's a whole nother question. As I said, the optics here are incredibly bad, just because this is literally happening as McCarthy is making his decision on who he is going to appoint to this committee. And here he is meeting with Donald Trump.
Well, it's also happening as we seem to be learning new details about that fateful day. Like, several reporters, including yourself, have been doing these deep dives on the days following the election. One of these books now from some Washington Post reporters claims that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was actually fearful Trump would try to use the military to launch a coup. He allegedly told aides that this was Trump's Reichstag moment. I mean, for all the politicians saying, you know, the other side's making this about their narrative, what are we learning about what government officials were thinking as this was unfolding?
Well, we know is that General Milley was deeply concerned about this, and this is something I'll have further detail about in my book as it comes out in the fall.
Yep.
But Phil Rucker and Carol Lenning have done an excellent job describing the what was in the head of General Milley in those days after the election and into January 6th and before finally Trump leaves office.
The motto has been, "This we will defend," and that "this" refers to the Constitution and to protect the liberty of the American people.
He was deeply concerned that Trump would try to use the military, and of course, General Milley was the top military officer in the country, that he was going to attempt to use the military to hold on to power.
We want to make sure the election is honest, and I'm not sure that it can be. I don't know that it can be with this whole situation, unsolicited ballots.
As a matter of fact, Brad, just 2 days before the election, Milley actually did a briefing with a representative from each of the five networks. The message of the meeting was, no matter what, the military is not going to get involved in this election.
That's not something you'd expect to have to be told.
No, I mean, the idea that the top military officer has to call in representatives from the major networks and say, look, I'm not going to be part of basically a coup, is really an extraordinary thing. And that is before the election.
We will win this. And we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it. So I just want to thank you.
And then, of course, the election happens, Trump loses, Trump refuses to acknowledge, starts spreading all these lies, and that's when Milley is starting to see and talk to people about that he sees echoes of Adolf Hitler in the rhetoric of Donald Trump. He was concerned about this Reichstag moment. And of course, you know, the Reichstag fire was used by the Nazis as an excuse, as a reason to seize power. And, you know, he was seeing the Reichstag, of course, as the German parliament building. And then we have here an attack on basically, you know, the U.S. Congress.
You ain't gonna stop us!
Breaking news at this hour. Capitol Hill right now, a tinderbox.
Detonations on the steps of the Capitol as you were talking, smoke being cleared as well.
And it's not, by the way, you know, I think Lenig and Rucker do a very thorough job in talking about other instances where General Milley is making Nazi comparisons when talking about either Trump or some of Trump's supporters.
Well, and so which leads to, you know, we've been talking about misinformation, which leads to more than half of Republicans, I think two-thirds of Republicans, according to some polls, say that Joe Biden was not legitimately elected president. I guess I'm wondering, like, if that's your voting base, if you're Kevin McCarthy, where does that leave you? Where does that leave the Republican Party when you talk about January 6th?
And all of that is weighing on Kevin McCarthy as he's deciding who to put on this committee. He has five members to appoint. Five members, and there. I know that there had been discussions about whether or not he would even appoint anybody, or just not recognize the legitimacy of the committee.
Pelosi continues to make this nothing about politics. That's why no one really takes this serious, based upon the direction of what she wants to go.
My latest intel on this is that McCarthy's intention is to appoint five members that represent the full diversity of the Republican caucus. And that's going to mean the majority of those five are going to be members who objected to electoral votes for Joe Biden. But I expect it would also include at least one or two who did not object to Joe Biden's election victory.
Right, with that chasm sort of on full display when this committee gets formed. All right, Jonathan Carl, by the way, author of the book, he mentioned it, Betrayal, coming out later this year. So we'll be waiting that. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Brad.
Today is the one-week mark, exactly 1 week until the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games in Tokyo. In fact, some competitions like softball start early because they need to get all the games in.
Here, the city is reintroducing the state of emergency, and that will be the context in which we will operate.
And yet yesterday, Japan declared its highest level of COVID cases in months. People are nervous.
They will not hang the medal around the neck of the athlete that they will present. Medal on a tray.
And so amid expanded protocols, there's actually concern over whether athletes will even be able to make it into Tokyo, let alone compete in the games. Let's go to ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman, who's done it. He's made his way to Tokyo. They let him in, James. Are they actually letting you walk around at all?
I got in. Yes, I got... Freedom Day was this morning, actually. It started today, so... Oh. I'm now able to leave my hotel, but there are various different levels of restrictions. So I can leave my hotel, go to certain areas, but I'm still not allowed into Tokyo proper. I have to wait another 11 days for that.
Oh, to go into the big city. And so in the meantime, it's the Olympic areas for you. Hey, with such heavy testing requirements, Can we talk about the athletes? Because we've already started seeing this kind of uptick in COVID cases. Does that mean that some athletes might not even get to go to the games at all? How does this work?
Well, absolutely. And we're already hearing it about the U.S. team. Olympic dreams are already over for at least one player.
I was told that Bradley will be, you know, ineligible to participate.
Bradley Beal from the Washington Wizards will not be coming here to Tokyo.
Definitely feel grim. It sucks.
Because of COVID measures, he's been put under what they're calling health and safety protocols.
We can accomplish our ultimate goal, which is going out to win a gold medal. You'd hope he still gets that gold medal because he did make that commitment to this team, to this country. You know, our goal overall is we're trying to get everybody safely to Tokyo.
And we know teams from around the world are having these sorts of issues. The problem, though, Brad, is precisely you put your finger on it there. Because COVID is surging, not just in the United States, but around the world, it's not just that if you test positive for COVID, it's that if you've come into contact with someone who's tested positive.
Right.
And because of contact tracing. So for one example, in the UK, over the last 24 hours, something like 500,000 people have been told to isolate because they've been pinged by contact tracing apps. So if you're one of those people and you're an athlete, how do you come to the Tokyo Games?
Oh, wait, so not just you, not even just, it would be like if your teammate tests positive or a coach, I guess? Like how far does that net go?
I mean, anyone you've come into contact with. I mean, the women's rugby team representing the Russian Olympic Committee. Of course, the Russians can't compete as a country. They've been banned for doping. But the women's sevens there, they are all in isolation because their masseuse tested positive for COVID-19. The South African men's rugby team, these are medal contenders. They're all in isolation because someone on their plane tested positive for COVID-19. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We're currently looking at the refugee team. These are a group of athletes from countries who've had to flee for war. They all compete under one flag. It's really wonderful and very moving. But at the moment, they're all stuck in Doha, in Qatar, because they can't get on a plane because a member of their team has tested positive.
Wait, you're not going to let the refugees travel? The refugees?
They're stuck. They're stuck at the moment. I mean, hopefully they'll make it for the games, but all this will impinge on their ability to train. They'll all be focused on whether or not they've got COVID rather than their particular discipline. I mean, they're really hoping that this doesn't derail the games. But at the moment, actually, the IOC has just published a list online, which they're going to update daily, of positive cases. They're calling it a positive case list. So we'll be watching that to see if it grows. Because, you know, if it gets out of hand, you've got entire events that might have to be cancelled. And I just want to make one thing clear is that, like, you've got to think about this as team events and individual events. If, like, one archer goes down with COVID-19, there's probably a replacement archer, a sub-archer who can come in and compete. Right. But if you've got a team like the South African rugby team and their fly half goes down with COVID-19, you can't just put any old rugby player into that position. They are specialized positions. They haven't got endless numbers of fly halves to take that place.
COVID is deadly. So the first thing you think about is not who I can get from my team and or who's next up. You think about how they're doing.
I mean, this is going to be a problem faced by the U.S. basketball team. They don't have endless numbers of various different positions on the court. So this is complicated.
Wow, so many things to keep track of here, including just what the heck a fly half is. So we're all learning. This will be a very exciting games. James, our resident rugby expert now. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
Okay, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, you think a full moon can mess up your day? Just wait 10 years. One last thing is next.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And one last thing. We spent time talking about how dry the weather has been in the western part of the states, but in Europe, floods have been wreaking havoc, in some cases causing deaths across Germany and Belgium.
Rivers burst their banks, sweeping away cars and bringing down trees.
Well, yesterday, here at home, scientists at NASA said soon you could see more flooding, well, everywhere.
A major surge in high-tide flooding is expected to hit U.S. coastal cities within the next decade.
There are two main culprits here. One is climate change, which is causing sea levels to rise and storms to become more violent. The other culprit is what they call a moon wobble. Yeah, apparently every 9 years or so, the moon's orbit slightly changes trajectory. What that means for us down here is that low tides get lower and high tides get higher. It's more extreme. We're actually in the middle of a moon wobble right now. And these days, the U.S. sees about 600 floods a year, a lot of them at high tide. But now, go ahead and add higher sea levels, supercharge it with a next moon wobble, and NASA says you've got semi-permanent disaster zones in the making. Forget 600 floods a year, we're talking about quadruple that. They're especially worried about what they call flood clusters, which could put certain spots underwater for over a month at a time.
Officials say the moon cycle will increase rising sea levels around that time, and northern coastlines like Alaska will be hit as well, just a little later.
City planners in coastal areas say they've been accounting for this in their projections, but just in case your commute takes you through low-lying highways, maybe hold on to your work-from-home supplies for the next decade or so. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Lewis Millman, Tara Gimbel, David Toledo, Madeline Wood, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Kirat Radia, Josh Margolin, Catherine McQuaid, Cheyenne Hazlett, and Chris Berry. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.